Greetings. This is Stefko Sarasvic, the lecturer's Types and Structures of Information Resources. We are going to explore what is out there for searching, what's under the hood, and we are going to explore this from the point of view that this is essential knowledge for you, for searchers. The central idea in this lecture is that as a searcher, you have to start with knowing about what is the content and how is that content structured. Content and structure is central for effective searching. So when we talk about contexts, we are talking about information resources. What is out there available? And there's a lot. There's a tremendous amount available. In this lecture and in the course, we will explore only a sample of what's available. The purpose of the course is not to give you an inventory of what's available, but the purpose is to show you how to do effective searching. So we'll do that in order to illustrate stuff so that you can generalize and explore later more fully, either in our own, either in your other courses or professionally. The central idea is to the organization, you have to know to do effective searching, how things are structured, prepared, indexed, classified, stored, and so forth. How are they made accessible? And this is all knowledge necessary to lay ground for searching. In other words, knowing what is under the hood. As usual, I will provide you a table of contents first. We have all together 44 slides. Six of the slides are about titles, so we have in effect 38 slides. Four of them are about definitions of terminology. Two are about examples of vendors. 19, and the bulk of the lecture, is about structures of records and databases. Seven are about searching, and mercifully I have only one slide in conclusions. So let us start with the first part, definitions and terminology. You are familiar with these concepts, but they are still worth revisiting. What do we mean by resource? When we are talking about information resource, in general, by definition, resource means a source of help. Somebody or something that's a source of help or information. An information resource, in a generic sense, it's a broad range of sources in a variety of formats. Well, an information resource is also the set of books, databases, indexes, references, and so on, sources that the library has, like Rutgers. Information resources are databases, files, systems that contain organized information records, Dialog, Google, are information resources. A database, and here I'm taking the definition from Webopedia, is a collection of information organized in such a way that the computer program can quickly select desired pieces of data. You can think of databases as an electronic filing system. Hidden in this definition is a very, very important aspect. The database is not organized for you. The databases are organized so that the computers can know how to handle them. Continuing the definition, and this is important now to realize, you probably all know that, but I want to refresh it. The traditional databases are organized by fields, by records, and by files. Searching, we are going to be concerned with what are we talking about when we talk about fields. A field is a single piece of information. A record is one complete set of fields, and a file is a collection of information. Here is an example. A telephone book is a file. It has records which consist of three fields: name, address, telephone number. A catalog is a file. It contains a list of records. These are describing usually books in a library. Each record has fields such as author, title, publisher, data, subjects, and heading. The concept of field is an extremely important concept in searching. Records are used in information resources are always, records that are used in information resources are always, always organized in fields. There is no such thing as a database that doesn't have records that are not organized in fields. But there is always a however. And the however is the different resources may and do use very different set of fields. Metadata, which is a term used very much in computing, and it simply means data about data. It provides information about a record. It used, for instance, in web records, it's always organized in fields. Indexes that are used in searching are organized, divided by fields. So fields do guide you to facilitate searching. Searching is automatically always done by fields. You might even not know, and usually people who search don't have a clue that there are fields and that searching is always done by fields. But more about fields a bit later. Well, the terminology is confusing, and even I am not consistent when I use it. So, who provides these information resources? Sometimes we talk about the providers. These are producers of databases, and there are a great many providers covering many, many fields. Probably there are several thousand in the world that provide databases for searching. For instance, Department of Education provides ERIC, a database of abstracts and indexes of educational materials. Sometimes we use also the terms vendors or aggregators. These are organizations, companies, that get databases from providers or from set of sources such as journals or publishers and organize them for searching. There's a large number of vendors. And some providers are their own vendors. For instance, Chemical Abstract, that produces chemical abstracts, also runs Scientific and Technical Network. Okay, let's now go to the second part of the lecture with seven slides, where we will be talking about examples of vendors. And the point that I want to make here when I talk about is also to demonstrate to you how this information industry is constantly changing and how, as a searcher, you should be well aware what is going on and who is coming up, who is going down, and so on. Dialogue. Dialogue is the one that you are experiencing first, and it is the oldest vendor on the market. It started in 1972. In the next slide, we're going to illustrate this a little bit more. It acquires databases from information providers all over the place, and it has over 900 databases. Nobody in the world is as large as Dialogue. As a matter of fact, I already mentioned that Dialogue has something like, 15 or 17 terabytes of information. And Library of Congress, the whole printed collection is 10 terabytes. So that kind of gives you the idea of the size. Well, Dialogue organizes content according to uniform structures. There is a structure that Dialogue imposes on the content of everything that a vendor provides, that the provider provides. These contents are done and described in blue sheets, and blue sheets will become, at least for Dialogue, the key element for searchers to examine in order to do effective searching. It is a most important tool for you, and when you need something to find out, look it up in the blue sheets. And you'll soon find why they are called blue sheets, because they're blue. Well, Dialogue does provide, and this is a great strength, it takes those 900 databases and provides a uniform and complex way of searching each and every one of them. Originally, the way Dialogue was started, it is geared toward professionals, it's geared toward you. It is not geared really toward end users and naive users, although they are trying to do it, but they never succeeded. It's still you. But you have to master them for effective searches. Dialogue does create some of its own files. For instance, there is a super index called dial index, which indexes all the files, and you can search it for first to find out which files to look at if you don't know. And Dialog provides access mostly through libraries and companies, their subscribers. Rutgers doesn't have it, but in class we have a free access to Dialog. Well, the story of Dialog is very much illustrative of the story of the information industry and the turbulence in that industry. A guy named Roger Summit, a very flamboyant guy, I met him a number of times, started Dialog in a company called Lockheed Missile and Space Company. Of all the places, it was a missile and space company that started a Dialog, but it started within their own information department. And Lockheed got a contract to develop a Recon, which is an online system for NASA. It was a government contract. And out of that contract came out the recognition by Roger Summit, hey, we did that. Let us start and provide a service on which we can make money. After quite a few years of trying to convince Lockheed to go into the information business, Summit convinced it. And in 1972, it went public as Dialog. And it was really at the advent of an online information industry. Before that, the information industry wasn't even called information industry. It was publishing, it was abstracting, and so forth. Now, in 1981, Dialog became a subsidiary of Lockheed. This means like an independent company within a company. And it moved to Palo Alto, California. By 1989, Lockheed reorganized itself and sold Dialog to Knight Ridder. That now Knight Ridder at the time had other information resources. For instance, Knight Ridder had DataStar and incorporated that, and even today you can search DataStar separate from Dialog because of this ancient history. And Dialog has 350 databases, but most of them are European oriented because the DataStar was European. Well, in 1997, in the middle of the internet bubble, Dialog was bought by a guy, I forgot his name, but he has a company named MIID in London. And he didn't like what they were doing in Palo Alto and just took it to Cary, North Carolina, and Dialog is still there. An amusing story is that the guy, and I forgot his name, who bought Dialog was very flamboyant in an internet thing, kind of a style, entrepreneur style, and he got in big argument with the financial structure in Britain, and especially with the Financial Times for some reason or another. And in return, the Financial Times started calling them not Dialog, but Dial a Dog. He never lived it down. Well, internet went bust, Dialog and Maid went bust, and the Thomson Corporation in 2000 bought Dialog and acquired it. Well, in 1992, Thomson bought ISI, Information Institute for Scientific Information, started by Eugene Garfield, that did citation indexes. And that became Web of Science, Web of Knowledge, and that includes Web of Science. So now Thomson had Dialog and Web of Knowledge and tried to integrate both of them. For reasons, God knows what business reasons, Dialog was bought in 2008 by ProQuest. But it turns out that ProQuest in the past was Bell & Howell. It was also UMI, it was also University Microfilm, so it has many information products and services. Among them, ProQuest bought a few years ago CSA, that used to be Cambridge Scientific Abstracts, another vendor with over 100 databases, and ProQuest still runs dialogue separately from CSA. Well, after all these turbulent years, dialogue is still in business and the information industry is still in business. But it's changing the same way the dialogue has changed. Okay, let's go on. By the way, why in the world we still teach dialogue? It is a legacy database. It's a granddaddy. Some call it, many call it, a dinosaur. And it is, in a way, a dinosaur. So, why do we do exercises in dialogue? There are several reasons. One is the oldest and largest surviving vendor, but that's not the real reason. It has a comprehensive set of databases. It has a well-developed instructional program, and you are the part of it. But most importantly, it serves not as a good, it serves as an excellent test bed to develop searching skills that are generalizable. Once you learn what's under the hood of dialogue, and it's most transparent to learn there, you will learn what is under the hood, or you can generalize to what's under the hood of the other databases, and you will get an insight into problems with searching. So I urge you, while you have the dialogue access for the semester, not only to search dialogue for the required exercises, but to play along with it. And in their various literatures, they have plenty of exercises that you can do. As in all lectures, I'm going to have now a sip of something, and this time it's water. Although I do have a cup of something. Let's see what it is. Tea. Okay. Let's go off from dialogue and go to something completely on the different end of the time scale. Scopus is the newest kid on the block, and it is making a tremendous impact in the information industry. It started in 2004 by Elsevier, which is a huge publisher. Elsevier is an international company, but originally it's a Dutch company, and the headquarters are in Amsterdam. It's very, very different from Dialog. Well, Dialog has these 900 databases. Scopus integrates over 17,000 journals and great many other materials, patents, and so on, all together, has no separate databases, but could be searched by broad fields, for instance, social sciences or something like that. It indexes all, or for some of the databases, like for Medline, it takes everything that Medline indexes, or everything that Engineering Indexing indexes and incorporates. Elsevier also has two large databases that are important for searching. One is Cyrus. It is free. And it searches the web. It doesn't search the documents, but the web. And I search it quite often. It's useful to see what's on the web. And it also has a Science Direct, which is access to journals full, which is access to the full text of journals. Science Direct is available at Rutgers and in the indexes and databases. Well, Scopus provides intuitive searching. It's geared toward end users. Remember, Dialog was geared toward you, professional searchers? Scopus, they had another market in mind. Is yes, you are an extremely important part of Scopus and their marketing. But at the end, they are gearing it so that, for instance, Rutgers Library is going to license it, and all the Rutgers faculty and students are going to search it. Not Rutgers searches. But it also provides great many other capabilities, for instance, citation tracking that is used to assess impact, and later on in one of the lectures and one of the units we're going to be talking about that. Most subscribers to Dialog, to Scopus, are libraries and companies, as and I pointed out, access to end users. Rutgers University Libraries had Dialog for a year. Nobody at Rutgers knew that it had. They dropped it. And but in class you have free access. It became major competition to Web of Science, which Rutgers University Libraries has it, and as a result, in the last 2 years, Web of Science changed significantly because it was pushed by this competition. Interestingly enough, Thompson, who had Web of Science, didn't invest much in the last few years till the competition show up. Well, let me give you some idea about the cost. Why? I have no idea how much Rutgers paid for Scopus, but I have some idea how much it pays for Web of Science. Rutgers has 12 lines to enter Web of Science, so 12 people at the same time can search. The 13 person has to wait till somebody gets up. And it has access only to Web of Science back to 1996, because the Web of Science has a pricing structure. You can buy a slice of it, or you can buy the whole thing, and the whole thing costs a lot more. Well, for this, 12 lines and 1996 access, the annual license fee for Rutgers Libraries is $100,000 as of last year. I don't know how much is going to be next. Okay? Off of Scopus. Well, let me make another point of Scopus. It's truly an international company, global company in the modern sense of the world. The headquarters are in Amsterdam. The computers are in Dayton, Ohio, and there's a long story why they are in Dayton. The marketing is beyond Amsterdam. It's also headquarters in London and in New York, and then in great many parts of the world. The indexing is done in the Philippines, and the use is all over the place. There are many types of information databases. Some of them are bibliographic, and some of them deal only with numbers. Some of them have full text. Some of them are directory. There are images, films, pictures. There are sound databases, multimedia databases. There are real-time databases as this is coming along. And as a searcher, you should be aware for what question, what kind of a database is available. Dialog has numeric databases. Scopus doesn't have numeric databases. But it has access, for instance, to Cyrus, because it covers Cyrus, to film and video databases and so on. Well, some of the databases that are in Dialog are also available elsewhere on their own. ERIC is available elsewhere, not only in Dialog. Some vendors have exclusive right to some databases, and many of them you will find at Rutgers. As a matter of fact, Rutgers has licenses to some 275, the last count that I did. And there are a number of disciplines or areas. When you are on your own, when you click on any of them, you can get access, but it requires that you are logged in Rutgers Libraries. Here is just a sample that I took. For instance, it has something in agriculture. This one is in history, the business. Doctoral students love this one, obviously. Education, Factiva is a business database, Hispanic, LexisNexis, Medline, Total Access, and so forth. It has library and information science oriented databases, for instance, the ACM Association of Digital, Association of Computing Machinery, Digital Library, ACES Digital Libraries, and so forth and so on. Well, here is a big problem that you as a searcher should be fully aware, and that makes frustrating living as a searcher and even more frustrating for users. Well, the problem is that in Dialog and in some other vendors, you can search a number of databases at the same time. This is a great strength of Dialog. This, that you can search many databases at the same time, is called federated searching. For instance, in Dialog, there is a file called 411. Get it? 411 telephone information and so on. It's called Dial Index, and you can go in Dial Index and select. You can actually select to search all 900 databases at the same time. But you can select databases according to fields, let's say social sciences, and search those. You can select databases by the numbers and so forth. In Scopus, you search the whole thing. So Scopus provides federated searching. But at Rutgers Libraries and elsewhere, there is no federated searching. Remember those 275? You have to search each and every one of them separately. However, there is now an attempt to provide federated searching, and Rutgers has licensed something called Searchlight, and you can search 8 databases at the same time. Sometimes there will be federated searching. There's a lot of research going on how to do it, because it's a very difficult problem. I'm not going to hold my breath, because it's not going to come that soon. Well, as Jackson Pollock would imagine, databases and their field looks like something like this. Okay, let's go to the largest part of our presentation with 19 slides about the structure of records and databases. And we will describe and how they are organized and describe the content. And this is the bedrock of effective searching. Knowing this is a bedrock of effective searching. What's under the hood? Databases structure their own records, whatever documents that they have or objects. Why? Well, to describe various parts of contents to computers, not for you, but for computers, so that then they can recognize it. And these parts are fields, and we will come to this concept a lot. Why? Well, I already described it. You can recognize when you see a document what's the title, and computers are dumb. They have to be told, they're fast, but they're very dumb. They have to be told that a title is a title, so that it can search for terms in the title when you request so. Fields in records are labeled as the content or function. There are many fields in databases that indicate the same content. For instance, most of them have title fields, author fields, abstract fields, and so forth. But various databases do it in their own way. And this is maddening for searchers, because various databases do it in whatever convoluted way, and very often it's very hard to decipher. There are a great many structures and schemes that were developed that prescribe what to label and what to use. And one of them is, for instance, MIC. MIC is a form of a meta language, and it has very, very well developed and prescribed what to label what. And these labels and meta language are developed by providers, by vendors, by organizations. They're standardized. Some of them are in different subjects and domains for different types of objects. For pictures, there are different metadata labels than there are for text and so forth. Meta tags are used on the web, and not very much, and the semantic web, which is coming and coming and coming, but still not here, is an attempt to further enable description of and searching for meaning. Well, you have no choice. In order to do effective searching, and this is what this course is all about, in order to do effective searching, so you have no choice but to get familiar with these types of schemes. Well, in some databases, description of structure is readily available. It may look forbidding and complicated, but they're there. You can see what are the blue sheets in Dialog. You can see what are the search fields in Scopus. And you have to immediately translate that. This is what they mean by field, this is fields that they have, and I can concentrate if I need to do effective searching of these fields. In others, the structure is not that readily available, and it's not readily available in Google, and particularly in Google, but clever, appropriate use of structure is key to effective searching. I'm getting like a broken record, but I want to impress you that particular thing. Or here's an example of a structure. This is the blue sheet. Now you know why it's called blue sheet. And the blue sheet is for a database 438, which is Library Literature Information Science. This is several pages long, and here is the first page. And down here, it describes you what is it all about. When you go further, it describes you down the records, and immediately you can discern the structures. This, for instance, thing is a title. This is authors. These are sources that appeared in this journal. These are languages. Language. This is company who did it. Here are the descriptors, and this is a structure for. This is the name for that field, and so forth. Well, in okay, here is how indexes are organized in Dialog. And a great many databases have similar approach. Dialog has two kinds of indexes. It has something called basic index, and that basic index is searched by default. When you put in select digital and libraries, it searches basic index. But it also has additional indexes, and these you have to indicate for searching. And these are additional indexes for authors, for sources, publications, and so forth. When you enter in a basic index, search digital and libraries anywhere, it looks for digital and the terms library anywhere in the documents. But within the basic index, you can restrict it and search for titles only. Then it will find documents that have terms in the title. All the databases have similar arrangements as to indexes, but they are not that clearly visible as in Dialog, but are searchable in the selections that you search. Okay, here is the basic index in Dialog. And it also provides you examples how to search. For instance, when you search the basic files, you can search like serials within one words of converting within two words of future, and so forth. But you can restrict it, for instance, to search serial publications as a descriptor, or Roosevelt with Frankel as a named name, and so forth. In additional indexes, you have all kinds of choices. For instance, you can search for journal name, you can search for language, you can search for a named person, for publication date, and so forth. Here's a neat trick. If you want to search only the latest they put in, and you want to see what is it that was the latest edition, you can do just search for UD99999, and it's a trick that professional searchers know and nobody else does. They also have limits, and you can limit stuff. For instance, you can limit a set 2 that you retrieve to English or to new or to non-English searches, or you can limit for something that's published between whatever years there is. Now, in Dialog, the results can be sorted by given fields. You can sort the results by authors, and you can rank them in different ways. It turns out that since Dialog started very early, algorithms that rank by relevance were not available then, and it took them forever to also add this, and it's kind of done very clumsily. so that you can rank them by certain whatever it is field there, or you can rank them by relevance. This is important for dialogue, but also for a great many databases. What is it that you get out? Results can be displayed in many ways, and this is true of Scopus as well. And you can display results only in titles, you can display them in full bibliographic citation, you can display them in abstract and so forth. So they call that format in dialogue. So you can, if you do display in format 3, which is medium, you get bibliographic citations. I display that quite often when I just want to have and the citation to include in the bibliography, I display it that way, save it, print it, copy, paste it, and so forth. Full record is either 5 or 9. The title, if you want the title only, but beware, in dialogue and in some other databases, what you display is what you pay differently. So the cost is different for different displays. In the class, the searching is free. In real life, it has an economic structure, and what they have is they calculate something in something called dial units. It's a Byzantine structure of charges. It's beyond understanding. But you get displayed what the dial units were. And different formats have different price attached. In full formats, in some files, like business files, they give you the whole record. They're quite expensive. So they can even go full format to $1,000 or more. Well, let's go on, at least in dialogue. Where do we find all about structure? In dialogue, there is a database called File 15, which displays all databases, and you can consult it often. You can find out what is in each database again and again. Well, some vendors have similar descriptions as blue sheets. Some indicate fields. Some show the structure. Revelation comes from checking what's available in advanced searching, and we'll get to that shortly. And some structure has to be surmised. For instance, in Google you can kind of get from advanced searching what's the structure. In Yahoo is almost impossible to surmise what the structure of it is. It's not readily apparent in all of them, but all have capabilities to be used in searching. Again, revelation comes from checking what's available in advanced search. So it's useful to click advanced search, not only to do advanced search, but to see how it's structured. Sometimes they are called search features, search tips, help, and the like. Most users do not take advantage of available structures, like 99.9 regular users don't take searching, but professional searchers do. And that is the reason why they're professional searchers, because they can do effective searching based on structures. And it is a part of their competencies. Okay, let us go and give some example of structures. Here's Google. How do you get to the structures? Well, this is a structure. There are fields that are available. This is a structure. You can go by language. You can by format and so forth. For instance, in Google, I do quite often searching by using the file type format. And for instance, for this particular course, I went and searched for advanced searching and went to file format PowerPoint and found out what other people who did PowerPoint lectures, like I do, did for advanced searching, and I learned something and incorporated. So it is kind of clever, even in Google, when you go to do advanced searching, to utilize these structures as much as possible. Here is an example of structure for focus. you have available sources to search and click on that and then select those. More fields are available. If you pull down this, you have about 10 fields where you can search, so you can put digital libraries and search in titles only or whatever. Then, so these pull-down fields give you quite a bit of searches. You can sort by date range, pull down again. You can select as to broad subject areas. And here is another type of a structure, as you can select by various kinds of documents. Okay, let me go now to another database, Library and Literature Information Science, full text, and as you can see, it looks very, very different, and it has much, much more restricted set of structures. You can search here also, pull down menu, and there are about 20 or so fields that you can search, and you can search by document types, physical description, and then you can limit it to these kind of things. Let us do another. Actually, we won't. What we are going to discuss here is that what are the similarity and differences? All vendors and search engines have basic and advanced type Boolean search capabilities. Everybody will allow you to search digital and libraries, or digital libraries as a phrase, and so on. But how it is done differs quite a bit. However, and this is what happens to everybody, including me, I go to a new database, I looked and said, what is this? And then suddenly there is an aha moment. Oh, this is what they meant in Dialog, this is what they meant in Scopus, and this is what they do, and this is what they have that Scopus doesn't have, and so forth. It's an aha moment that you are generalizing what you learned from Scopus, from Dialog, and so forth. Many vendors, not all, but many vendors and search engines have advanced search features above and beyond Boolean. All vendors rank output results, but how it's done very different. By default, most vendors use the LIFO principle, last in, first out. But it also provides you for a number of other ways, for instance, to rank output by source and so forth. Search engines, like Google, are ranking by relevance, by clustering, by page rank, and other criteria. However, what these criteria, relevance ranking, for instance, are, they don't tell you. It's not easy to discern, and many of them are deeply kept secrets, the same way that Coca-Cola formula is kept. Well, let me now contact users and professional searches. Most users don't know or don't care about structures, don't search beyond default capabilities. 90-some% of users in the studies that have been done about searching do not use anything beyond default. 95 or more percent of users don't look beyond one or two pages of results. They miss great, great many potentially relevant results. They don't have a clue what's under the hood, and they can't do advanced or more sophisticated searching. In context, what makes a professional searcher a professional searcher is they know the structures, and they use the available structures. They understand defaults and use advanced capabilities. And this is extremely important for effective searching. And they know the tricks for not missing stuff or not getting too much junk. And they do explore each of the databases to learn what's under the hood for searching. Okay? We are going to 7 slides about indexes that are used in searching. We all know what's an index, but let's refresh. It's a list of words and associated pointers to where those words can be found. The search engines, what they do when they index, they collect, they parse, they store data to facilitate fast and accurate information retrieval. This is the definition. How accurate it is, that's a matter of interpretation. Automatic indexing does that. There are a great many kinds of indexes. We have back-of-the-book indexes, we have alphabetic indexes, subject indexes, classified, and so on. As to creation, a great many are created manually, and more are created automatic. Today, the trend is toward automatic creation of indexes, not manual indexing, which was done for decades and decades, let's say, by chemical abstracts, by Medline. They still do manual indexing, but the trend is automatic indexing by computers. Why? Why is there a trend? Well, indexes have some nasty economic habits. Indexes like to eat, like to have a shelter and so forth. In other words, they cost a lot of money. And with the increasing power of computing and with the increase in sophistication of algorithms, it becomes cheaper and cheaper to do by computers. Well, here we deal with index structures. In the next lecture, we will be dealing with indexing vocabularies. The base of indexes, of searching of in all kinds of databases, is an inverted index. Every single one of the databases have some kind of an inverted index. It's an index that contains terms mapped to references to the documents they appear in. The index is sorted by its keys, index terms. Inverted means that the documents are found by matching on terms rather than other way around. The end-of-book index is an inverted index. The first inverted indexes were made in the 12th century. It was a concordance of the Bible. Concordance is an alphabetical list. You know, you have the term Adam or heaven, and the concordance gives you all the passages and sentences where the term Adam or heaven appeared. And you can well imagine the monks, they did that, pored over every word in the Bible, and had sheets in which they wrote down, and probably the concordance of the Bible took several decades to do. The same thing can be done in several seconds, if not even shorter, by a computer. In contrast to inverted index, there's a sequential index. You have a document, number one, and everything under that document. Document number two, and everything under that document. So it's one by one. Inverted indexes can be made from regular sequential indexes, you know, document by document, can be made from text, can be made from abstracts, can be made from full text, and today they're made quite a bit from the full text of impact. It's easily. It follows given documents. But most automatic indexes omit so-called stop words. In Dialog has only 9 stop words, and for the, and so forth. Well, the searching is then done on the inverted index. Searching is not done on the sequential index. That'll be impossible. It'll be impossible. So it's useful to understand the structure of these inverted indexes. Well, here's how it's done. For a document, every word is identified at where it appears in text. So search looks for appearance. So if we have a document in which digital library is mentioned, then digital library is in position 8 in sentence 10. Library is in position 9 in sentence 10. It follows it, okay? Then the searching for digital library is the way the computer will look for it. It'll look for all the sentences where Digital and libraries are next to each other in the same sentence. And when they find that, says bingo, and it leaves them as a hit. As you can imagine, this is a very, very computationally intensive job, but given the powers that we have today, this is also very fast. But since I'm talking about the powers of making today, let me digress a little bit about the searching. The searching is not a neutral activity as to environment is concerned. It is very, very much contributes to production of CO2, the gases in the atmosphere, and it's, as a matter of fact, it's very harmful to the environment. A recent study, and I placed the document in doc sharing, has found that searching is an intensely harmful environmental activity, which is a surprise to most of searchers. Why? Well, because it uses a lot of computing power. Computing power requires a lot of electrical and other resources, and these other resources produce harmful effects to the environment. So we are not environmentally neutral. Okay, let's go back after this diversion. It is very useful to know how they function and understand. And there are two steps, essential steps. There are many sub-steps, but there are two steps. Each document is indexed. Every word in the document is taken as index, with the exception of stop words. Every position of every word in the text is noted. Then, the indexes for all documents are merged. Index terms are arranged alphabetically in some place in the bowel of the system. And under each index terms are document numbers in which it appears and position in text for that document. So, you add a document to the system, the whole inverted indexes to index files has to be updated. And large vendors, large producers such as Eric and Son and Dialog don't do it every day. They do it every so often. But that is one of the great costs, computational costs, that every time you add something, you have to update the inverted index. Okay, let me give you a few examples and then we will finish. This is taken from Walker and Jane's book, and here are four documents, number 101, 102, 103, 104. Here is the title of the document, each of them. Here is the abstract text of the document, and here are the descriptors of this document. Well, you take all this the way it's written, and here you have four document 101 that term origins appeared in the title in the second position, the term dawn appeared in this document in the title in the fourth position, and so forth. So it goes through all of them. There is more to it. So we have that term analysis appeared in this document in the field of descriptors in the seventh position. And here is now inverted index. Here are alphabetically all the terms. There is more down here in the document. Where does this, for instance, document number? It turns out that this is a year, but since you didn't say the field year, it's a simple number for the computer. And Alexander appears in our document 104 in the terms abstract in the 18 positions and so forth. So now you can do some searching to find out where does the word opera and final appear, and computers is going to compare that. You can certainly investigate these inverted indexes is in other of the text. So let's go to the conclusions. Searching is more an art than a science. But it is an art that needs a lot of knowledge. What is behind it? One of the aspects of that knowledge to become a very successful artist in searching, or professional rather than artist, is a knowledge of the structures of the records, the fields, and so forth. Okay, thanks, Jackson. Click on this, try, and you are going to enjoy it no end. I had my grandkids clicking on that, and they were for half an hour on the computer at least. Thank you.